Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Fantasy Pros Selection Sunday Bracket Strategy live stream presented by Pool Genius. I am your host, Ryan Wormley. We are back with our special March Madness podcast. Tonight, we'll be reacting to the bracket reveal, sharing some proven strategies to win your pools, also some specific teams that we think look mighty intriguing as potential picks in your pools this year to help us fill out our best brackets. We're getting help from Pool Genius, a new brand from the folks at TeamRankings.com, created to focus exclusively on pool picks and tools. Pool Genius has expanded to now cover March Madness, football, and golf pools, and subscribers report winning their pools over three times as often as expected, with over $8.5 million in winnings. We've also got Jason Lisk from Team Rankings on to help us out. Jason, thanks for coming on. There's no feeling quite like Selection Sunday, right?
Oh man, it's been a wild one too. This has been as wild of a weekend heading into Selection Sunday as I can remember. So many teams that we didn't think were in got in. Other teams were probably thinking they were safe on Thursday when they lost, or Friday, and some of those are home, like Oklahoma.
Yeah, it feels like conference tournament, you know, weekend is always so wild and exciting, but this is right up there with some of the, you know, most fun of those weekends we've had. Before we deep dive into bracket reactions and bracket pool strategy, a quick heads up for all Fantasy Pros listeners. This year, Fantasy Pros has partnered with Pool Genius to bring you a special discount not available on the Pool Genius site. Get 40% off all March Madness pool picks and tools, including bracket pool picks, NCAA Survivor pool picks, and tools for Calcutta auctions. Plus, get up to 55% off annual subscriptions that include every March Madness, football, and golf pool they cover, including NFL Survivor, Football Pick'em, and Golf One and Done, among others. Just go to poolgenius.com/fantasypros to lock in your discount right now. That's poolgenius.com/fantasypros. All right, Jason, enough preamble. Let's get to what everybody's waiting for. We have a bracket and we are going to react to it. What was your first takeaway, the very first thing that hit you when you saw the full bracket revealed?
I mean, even before the full bracket was revealed, when the first quadrant was revealed, I was like, holy cow, this one's loaded. When I saw Auburn come up as the four on the same side as UConn, and then I saw Iowa State come up with Illinois, you got the only four teams out of the major conferences that won the conference tournament other than the Bid Stealers. So basically, everybody that played great this week is now bunched together. But it's not like this was a fluke, them playing great. We have three of our top six teams in our power ratings that we were working on all week, kind of adjusting what do we think teams are now, all that stuff, are in this region.
Yeah, that's why I didn't even think about the fact that these were all, you know, the conference tournament winners. That is crazy. I pulled a graphic here just to react to with the top four seeds by region. So it was UConn, Iowa State, Illinois, and Auburn in the east, Houston, Marquette, Kentucky, and Duke in the south, Purdue, Tennessee, Creighton, Kansas in the Midwest, and North Carolina, Arizona, Baylor, and Alabama in the West. I'm sure everybody's already kind of dived into all of the, you know, the regions themselves, just as a reminder for folks who don't have it in front of them. Is the East sort of, you know, we always kind of ask, what's the region of death, the toughest region? Is it the East for you, or is it another one?
I mean, I think it's the East as far as, like, I mean, they didn't do UConn any favors. UConn is still really good, but they certainly didn't. They gave him as tough a path as possible, other than the second round. I don't think the 8-9 in that region is very tough. But once they get past that point, I think they could be facing four great matchups to have to win a title. So, yes, I think from top down, the toughest, maybe not the most balanced, although BYU as a 6 is still a strong team as well. But, yes, top down, the toughest to advance if you're a top team.
Is there one of those top seeds that you thought got the clearly most favorable draw?
Yes, I thought, Arizona, other than that first round matchup, and I will say this, Long Beach State is not a typical 15. Their record may not be gaudy. They beat USC. They won at Michigan back when Michigan was actually trying and playing well in November. Won at DePaul. So they've beaten major conference schools. Then they went through a swoon, had some injuries, all that stuff, and then turned it on again after their coach got told He was not coming back. So yeah. This is a team, when you see teams with that kind of variability and what they can do, they're a little more dangerous than a team that was healthy all year. Same guys were playing all year. They've shown they can play with the big boys a little bit. But past that, I think it's a favorable draw for Arizona. Baylor potentially has some depth injury issues. We'll see if Langston Love comes back. In the second round, that 7-10 matchup, I think, is one they can handle. And then, you know, New Mexico's the 11 in that region. New Mexico's, favored, I think, in early lines, or at least a pick 'em against Clemson. New Mexico's a good team to get underseeded, but it's not a particularly tough. You could see, like, a New Mexico actually make a run and then have to face an Arizona. I could see kind of that region falling apart and opening up for Arizona.
We have a comment here from Johnny Donuts saying that Wisconsin and Iowa State are his favorite sleepers. What do you think about those picks?
Yeah. So, I mean, Iowa State. It's the committee again has shown us sometimes they don't care what happens this week. Sometimes they do, yeah. But sometimes they don't. Iowa State answered a lot of questions. They had dominated at home. They lost some neutral site games back in November, but that's when they didn't have their full lineup that they're playing now. And so then they go to Kansas City and they dominate. This looks like a top six team. And here's the thing. They're really good on defense. They remind you a lot of, say, a Texas Tech that went as a 3 seed back in 2018, a team that will just absolutely battle you on defense. Will the offense be there? Who knows? But, man, they're the best defense in the country, and they would get after it. Wisconsin, potentially tough draw. I think James Madison is going to be a popular pick for people. But they're going to be ignoring that this Wisconsin team's actually playing a lot better. Their backup point guard was out during conference play. I think that really cost them. They have no other true point guard. So they're playing much better now. They had a lot of bad three-point luck in Big Ten play. They were 14th out of 14 in three-pointers made against. So some of their downturn, when you look at, you know, you look at them, you're like, they were good in November and December, and then they weren't that great in Big Ten play. I think a lot of it's just randomness. I think this Wisconsin team put it together again in the Big Ten tournament, and that's more the team you're going to see.
I don't know, Jason, if you can see the Maryland hoodie that I'm wearing. I'm well aware of Wisconsin putting it together in the conference tournament. They obliterated the Terps, and obviously Maryland, you know, nowhere near this tournament. I'm only going to mention it one or two dozen times.
Well, I'm a Mizzou grad, so I didn't even have to think about it. You at least had to think about, are we on the NIT bubble? I didn't have to worry about anything.
I saw somebody say like a month ago, because Maryland's obviously had a terrible year, that Maryland would be on the bubble if they expanded the tournament to 96 teams, which is not a fun place to be. But nowhere near the actual tournament here. You know, obviously Maryland and Mizzou aren't scrubs. It feels like every year everybody likes to talk about, or it's not scrubs, excuse me, snubs. It feels like every year people like to talk about who the snubs are. I felt like there was a lot more grumbling online this year than I usually see. People are unhappy with the committee every single season. It felt louder to me on Twitter this year. I don't know if you noticed the same thing. Did you have an obvious snub or an obvious sort of seeding discrepancy that stood out to you?
Well, I mean, the job got made so much harder this year. So when we're talking snubs, I mean, teams that ordinarily would have been safe as like the first 10 in are now on the bubble. Teams like, you know, Oklahoma would have made it in most years. When they get to the bubble, though, and with what happened here, the committee starts to look, oh, they weren't playing well down the stretch. Their top player was out injured at the end of the season. You know, those things probably hurt them at the bubble. Whereas if they're 10 teams in, committee doesn't even think about that. They seed them and move on. St. John's, great team. Didn't even get consideration. Weren't even one of the first two or three out. But I don't know that there's a clear snub where you're like, they could have. The argument was there for a lot of these teams. I think it was justified. I would have loved to see St. John's in this field. I personally don't want to see Virginia in this field. My gosh, I'm done watching their rock fights.
Yeah.
But we're going to see them.
Yeah, I did notice you didn't mention Indiana State. I noticed on Twitter that they are the highest ranked team in the net, 29th, to ever be left out of the field.
Back last Sunday, I thought Indiana State was a value to make the field when they ran some props. They were like plus money when they opened at like plus 200, and it closed at minus 110. So people did bet it. And then this week happened. This was just an unfavorable week for a team like Indiana State to make it. I think in a typical year, we've seen teams like Belmont, like Drake, get in like this Indiana State team. But I think with it shrinking to like 10 seed level, that just made it where it worked against them. I think they would have been a fun team. I think they easily could have justified putting them in on they're good enough. So I would have loved to see Indiana State. I personally would love to see those teams because we get to see the other teams all the time.
Is there any one first round matchup that you're like most excited about? Just you want to see these two styles go against each other?
There's so many. And then we'll talk about I'll dive into this one a little bit later. But Nebraska and A&M has two, I think, interesting teams that are playing well on offense now. And you wouldn't have said that about A&M a month ago. But they completely changed how they played with this three-guard lineup with Obaseki. And that's going to be a fun matchup as an 8-9, I think. I don't think Mississippi State, Michigan State will be a fun matchup to watch, but it's going to be a compelling one. That one is going to be a fight. It may not be pretty shooting in that game, but there's going to be some defensive, battles in that game.
Yeah. I'm not sure how far you've looked ahead beyond just this first round upcoming in a couple of days. Is there a matchup after the first round, a potential matchup that you'd really like to see?
I mean, let's see. I mean, first of all, UConn-Auburn would be, I think, incredible. Really, because that Auburn team is probably one of the few you would put on a short list where you're like, okay, I could see a path to them winning that game against UConn at full strength. So that's one. I think Texas Tech Kentucky would be great in the second round. Different kind of Texas Tech's toughness against Kentucky's offense would be a compelling matchup for me. And then I'm interested to see if any of these there's some really compelling. I don't know if any of them can win, but compelling 12 seeds. Teams that have fun styles like Samford, like James Madison. Man, if they make a run, it'll be fun.
Definitely. I want to ask one more question before we move on to the next segment. Is there a one seed that you think is the most vulnerable? So not just like the draw they got, because obviously UConn is a tough draw, but like we've seen Purdue get upset many years in a row in the tournament. You know, North Carolina is obviously the lowest ranked of these four, one seeds. Is there one that you think is the most vulnerable overall?
So I would say it depends on what we hear out of Houston on Juwan Roberts coming out of the Big 12 tournament. I think they've already lost a backup post to injury for the year. They're thin there, and he's kind of their junkyard dog. I mean, they've got all these really hard-playing guards, but I don't think they can replace Roberts if Roberts isn't 100%. And so that's going to be tough for them. Obviously, at full strength, Houston's one of the top three teams in the country. That's a question mark because that A&M Nebraska is lurking in the second round if he's not healthy in less than a week. North Carolina is vulnerable, and I think they have a tough draw too. I think that's the Michigan State, Mississippi State region, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, for that reason, and they're I don't think they're as elite on offense. They've had their struggles at times, and they just let NC State light them up. And they've had some games where the defense has allowed teams to shoot really well inside and outside, and we just saw it again. And so that concerns me with North Carolina. Purdue, I think it depends on the matchups they get later on. They are still vulnerable to teams that can turn them over. If teams can turn them over, they're vulnerable.
Definitely. Now, Jason, I know the team behind Pool Genius has spent over 20 years in the world of bracket pools, doing all sorts of advanced data analysis and applying some pretty crazy technology to crafting the best March Madness brackets. But to start, let's just skip right to the takeaways. What do most people get wrong when it comes to bracket pool strategy? Is there any conventional wisdom out there that's actually maybe more dangerous to bettors than it is helpful?
Yeah. So one of the first things we would say, one of the big strategy points is people usually in most pools pick too many upsets for their pool. If you're in a pool where you don't get upset bonus points, where the points escalate a lot and the champion is worth a lot, you're wasting time looking at individual upsets and you're probably losing equity picking upsets in general. You should be worried about finding the best champion pick you can and maximizing your pool so you can win with that champion pick. If you spend all your early picks on upset picks because you think it might happen, you're probably giving away EV. And then when other people have your champ pick, you may end up being at the wrong end of the standings relative to them. So that's one, is don't overpick upsets. Obviously, that's dependent on scoring. If you get more points for upsets, absolutely. That's dependent on size. The larger you get, the more upsets you're going to want to sprinkle in at large pool sizes because you're facing more people. You've got to hit more extreme outcomes.
Anything else?
Yeah, there's absolutely, we talk about risk and reward, and that's part of it, is think about risk and reward with your pool size. Think about, one of the things I think people have in mind is I got to get really crazy with my bracket picks to win. And we look at winners in like pools of 300, 500 people. And usually the winners of those pools got the champ right. They didn't even get like San Diego State for the most part, Miami last year, FAU. They didn't get North Carolina 2 years ago, but they had the champ, and maybe they had 2 years ago Villanova or Kansas in the Final Four. And they hit enough picks early. So you can win a pool of that size by getting the key picks right. So I would more think about concentrating risk, and don't think that just picking a one or two seed is like complete chalk. You can find ways to build combinations, even for pool sizes of 300, 400, where you have a lot of good teams in your Final Four, top three, four seeds, and are still unique from the field.
Are there any sort of trends that people always do? Like you always see people talk about there's always a 12 over a 5 that you think maybe aren't actually that valuable?
Well, the 12 over 5 thing is actually, it's probably the most common thing people think of. It's overstated. Probably in recent years, it's been 11 over 6. We've seen, because teams are seeded differently. They used to be 20 years ago. We now have the field is 68. The 11 seeds have actually dominated, have won more than half the games. And people, so if you're obsessed about 12-5, it's the 11 seeds that have actually been good enough to make Final Four runs if you've identified the right ones. So I wouldn't get caught up in like seed numbers. Every year is different. Some years you have really strong seeds at those 11, 10, 12 spots. Some years you don't. Some years the brackets are balanced. Some years the top four or five teams separate themselves. I'd say this is a mix. We have some, I think, decently strong top teams this year, but we do have some question marks. I think there are some weak teams in the middle, but it varies by region. I think some regions caught the wrong teams if you're a high seed, and some didn't.
So the sort of the big three here that you don't want to do too much of is don't fall in love with upset picks, pay attention to risk versus reward, and every year is different. There's not these true like golden rules that you need to follow all the time. I want to ask you, follow up on the upsets one,
yeah.
Because I know personally, if I have a team that I really like to the Sweet 16, whoever they're scheduled to, likely to face in the second round, I'm more inclined to pick an upset in that first round because I know I'm not taking that team to the Sweet 16 anyway. So if I have a four seed that I'm scrolling right to the Sweet 16 no matter what, I might be more inclined to pick that 12 over the 5 and try and sneak an upset in because I don't have them going further anyway. Would you say that's kind of sound strategy or am I doing it wrong?
I think that's better. I mean, I think the worst way for you to fill out a bracket would be to just go start in the first round and look at all 32 and pick whoever comes to mind. And then what you're going to find is you're going to get to the Final Four and be like, oh, I have that team in the Final Four. You should strategically think backwards. I think it's fine to do that. It's even better to do that in certain pool types. Like if you're getting upset bonuses, absolutely. If I don't need a team to go deep, I want to maybe pick against them and maximize those upset points. I would say if you love to make those picks, there's pools. I don't know if you played any of them, seed bonus pools, where you get the difference or seed difference pools. Where you get the points of the seed. I mean, I won one back in 2018 because I had Loyola Chicago as an 11 in that type of pool. And that's the only pick I needed. They just racked up 11 points every round and I was dominating people because I had them. And so pool type matters. But yes, I don't think it's crazy to pick those upsets. I think if you have a strategy like, oh, they're only a 2-point, 3-point dog, so they're reasonable risk, and maybe they're not popular. So I think I'm getting some edge there and making a unique pick on one where I have a little edge. I think if you're just making upset picks to make them, though, that's not sound strategy.
I know we just said not to pick too many upsets, but are there any first-round upsets this year that you actually do find yourself liking, maybe any particularly spicy double-digit seeds?
I mean, the Sanford-Kansas one pops to me right away. We're going to wait to hear on Kansas – They got seeded down to a four because of the injury concerns. I think the official word is Dickinson and McCullough, the two players that have been hurt. Dickinson hurt his shoulder in the Houston game. They both missed the Big 12 tournament. Is they're going to play? But I'm still a little leery that they're 100%. Samford, meanwhile, plays at high pace. They press. They shoot lots of threes. They're a fun team to watch. And the kind of team, if you haven't faced them, or if you're like Kansas, a little limited on your depth, and that could be a concern. So that's a fun one to watch. Charleston, another team that I think is catching Alabama. This Alabama team is struggling defensively. I've been fading them with picks over the last couple of weeks when they've been favored against Arkansas in the tournament against Alabama or Florida. They are not playing well right now on defense. They're losing shootouts. They're vulnerable to getting scored on. Sometimes teams that can't get stops are upset victims. And this Charleston team is playing better now. They were a trendy pick last year when they won over 30 games. This one's peaking at the right time, though.
Let's take a quick break to remind you that Fantasy Pros and Pool Genius are offering an exclusive deal just in time for March Madness. Score 40% off March Madness pool picks and tools this tournament season, plus up to 55% off on annual subscriptions covering everything from football to golf. Don't miss out. Head to poolgenius.com/fantasypros for your special discount. Again, that's poolgenius.com/fantasypros. Now back to the show. Before we dive into our next segment here, Jason, we have another question. This comes from Tyler. What is your take on the bottom half of the South? As a reminder, that's Texas Tech, NC State, Kentucky, Oakland, Florida, and then the winner of Boise State, Colorado, and then Marquette, Western Kentucky. What's your take on that section?
Yeah, so I'll just say that there are a lot of what I would call high variance teams in this region. I think there are teams where I could look at each of them and tell you good things and then concerns. I could build a case for a lot of these teams. Marquette, been without Kolick, had injuries to other starters earlier in the year. They're better with their full lineup. They might be one of the top five teams when they have their full lineup. Their overall power rating may not show that because of the injury issues. But is Kolick 100%? I don't know if we'll know that. It's a muscle injury. That's a risk. High variance pick. But in a large pool, these are the types of picks you need to make because others may not be picking them, and you may be one of the few with them as a champ pick in a really large pool, right? So that makes sense. But a high variance, they could burn you early, right? Same thing. I mean, Kentucky, great offense, better than their full season numbers when they're fully healthy, but the defense is a concern. They just got blitzed by A&M. That's a concern. Texas Tech, really good recently, even though they've had some injuries, playing more small ball. They really dominated BYU. But will they match up with NC State's DJ Burns if their big man, Warren Washington, is out? What will they do in that matchup? But that's a tough team. That team, I could see Tech losing right away or making a run. And then Florida just lost Hanglin today. I mean, this Florida team was peaking and then lost a key player. How will they react? Who knows? They've got depth. I think they could overcome it, but you certainly don't want to lose a player of that caliber.
Yeah, I really liked Todd Golden when he was at San Francisco, and I loved the hire for Florida. And they were a very fun team to watch this year, very balanced offensively. That was, you know, really tough and a very heartbreaking injury to watch and you know the way that unfolded. So that was a tough one there. Just another quick comment from D. Mitch. He's got UConn over NC State to win it all. So going bold on half of that one too. We're gonna hit on UConn here.
Oh, he's got UConn, huh?
In a bit. Yeah, the UConn, it makes sense. The NC State would be quite a run.
Well, I mean, maybe he's thinking this is like, what is this? It's not 2023, though. It's 24. I was thinking he was thinking it was the 40th year anniversary of the Jim Valvano run. Yeah. And he was playing on that.
Almost. Yeah, just a bit off there. Now that we know some of the key principles for winning bracket pool strategy, can you explain a little bit of the secret sauce behind the NCAA Bracket Picks product from what goes on behind the scenes in terms of, you know, research and technology to help us identify the best possible bracket to play?
Yeah, I mean, we've been busy. I'll just say that we start with this on our site. We have our power ratings just like you would have with other sites. that are taking every game and we're getting a power rating. But we don't stop there because we could just run simulations on those power ratings. But what we do coming into this week, we spend myself, one of our other guys, David Hess, we are hands-on digging into teams. I started the process probably 3 weeks ago. We've got some internal tools we've created where we can look at lineups, see minutes played, see who started pretty quickly, run some similar lineup analysis. I can tell you quickly which games this team played the most similar lineups to the current one and which ones were very dissimilar and like compare how they did. And so we're doing a lot of that comparison. We're seeing where guys were injured. So we're running analysis on that. We're digging in and then studying the reasons why. So a lot of it is like hands-on where we're making decisions on, do we think this team's better or worse than their raw number? Are they better because they had guys out? Are they slumping because somebody's injured now? Are they slumping because they made a lineup change? Some coaches, you know, we'd like to think coaches generally know what they're doing, but sometimes they make moves that don't work out. Basketball is a chemistry sport. The combination of players, sometimes you make a lineup and roster move and it doesn't work. So we're looking at which combinations are working, which teams are better than their raw number because they're using a lineup that's completely different than November and December and they're playing a different style and it's working now. Because those are the teams where you find value. So we're digging into those and we're going to make adjustments to that. And so our ratings are a combination of our raw rating and that. So we're digging into that stuff. That's one thing. And then we run the simulations. We take our numbers. We figure out what kind of variance we want to use because we're not going to use the same variance this year on every team. One with a lineup that's been consistent, we're going to say is a little less high variance than one where we have injury concerns or something. And we're going to run our simulations, thousands of simulations. We're going to spin up the servers tonight. And by tomorrow morning, we're going to have our public pick data that we're taking in. We're getting it from a variety of sources so we know how people are picking. And then we're going to create our optimized brackets with all of that process. So that's how that works is we take the data, we run the simulations, we do a lot of analysis. We aren't just looking at spreadsheets to run it. We're trying to figure out which teams are better or worse than they look. And then we, when you come into our site, you sign into the tools. You tell us what your rules are, and then by Monday night, once we've done all this analysis, we'll release our first set of brackets, and you'll be able to see, and you'll get brackets if you are a subscriber for your pool. You'll get up to five. You can get one with a champion, ex-champion, and you'll get five variations on that that play off of it. Maybe they have a different champ. Maybe they have different key Final Four picks if you want to play multiple brackets. So we're running all those optimal things to help you out. And then once we get to tomorrow and beyond, we're still looking at market data. Where's the injury news? We've got like 10 situations we're monitoring where we may adjust the numbers. And by Wednesday, we'll rerun them and we'll give you your final brackets.
Is there like a time in the week that you typically like to submit brackets in your own pools? Like, oh, I like the first reaction early so I don't overthink it, or I want to wait till, you know, Wednesday night or Thursday morning to give myself as much information as possible. When do you like to submit?
We would say wait as long as possible. For obviously, I get what you're saying about initial reaction and all that, but there are injury situations that will matter, and the market and betting info will react to that. And I think we want to be aware of that. And so I think it's fine to take that position is I'm going to generally have this idea, but if things change on some key teams, I'm going to take that into account. Usually it doesn't change a lot, but it might be like if we're running, you know, big pools and multiple brackets, maybe we have the same main champ, but we decide maybe which longer shot on one of the alternate brackets is worth risking based on some of the other analysis.
Another question here from the chat from Sam. How do you factor in the odds versus what you see others picking? If a ton of other people are out there making, you know, one pick versus the odds that you have, how do you sort of weigh those two against each other?
Yeah, it's very hard. I will say this. It's very hard because it's not just one set of one game and one set of games. Like in a survivor pool, maybe in the NFL week, I know that 40% are picking this team. That's just that game result. I need that team to lose and 40% of you walked out. It's not the same in bracket pools because every top seed is going to be reasonably popular early on. And you may have situations in a bracket where a team is, let's say, more popular than they should be up to a certain round and then becomes a value. Well, what do you do with that team, right? do you want to push them past the point of value, or do you want to go against them early when they're overvalued? All those things come up, and we try to balance it. You can't go straight contrarian with every pick. If all you wanted to do was go contrarian, you would have a pretty wild Final Four that was very unlikely to happen. And you got to have some teams make the Final Four to win. And so it's a balance. What we find is sometimes you may have a semi-chalk pick on one side as long as you have kind of your key value pick coming with them on the other side. And so it's just figuring out that balance of risk based on pool size versus reward based on the value difference, because the value difference matters. I mean, you're going to get value differences all along the way.
Another question here, or not a question, but just a statement from Chris. Grand Canyon over St. Mary's. How do you feel about that one?
That is it's going to be interesting. That's a style contrast game, as are most contests with St. Mary's. Grand Canyon will try to speed them up. They'll try to turn them over. St. Mary's is pretty good at that. St. Mary's controls the glass, controls tempo usually. Can Grand Canyon actually hurt them enough? St. Mary's is without a starter. Josh Jefferson, who is one of their leading rebounders and defenders, hasn't really hurt them yet other than the Gonzaga loss to end the season. But they haven't played the quality teams they're getting ready to play, so we'll see. I mean, I think Grand Canyon could do it. They're going to have to break down St. Mary's and get them out of their style.
Let's hit on some more specific teams from this year's bracket. As you mentioned, you guys have kind of been poring over all this data for weeks now, looking for angles that even some of the top computer ratings may have missed. Are there any nuggets that you've come across that you're willing to give out as a freebie now that we have the bracket?
Yeah, plenty. Well, my first one, if you like to bet, St. John's to win the NIT. And that's not a bracket pick, obviously, but we evaluated St. John's getting ready, thinking they might be in the field. They're 26th on KenPom. We have them higher than that. We had them like inside our top 15. We would have, if they would have been a 10 or 11, they might have been a team we would have had as a value pick to like the Sweet 16, Elite Eight in certain brackets. And that's gone. Rick Pitino's team turned it around and they made lineup shifts, and those shifts have worked. And they've gone 7-1 with the one loss coming to the best team in the country, UConn. And they're not in the tournament. And I get it. Maybe they didn't think their overall resume, but man, I wish that team was in. Teams in the field. I talked to Nebraska.
Quickly, actually, sorry to interrupt you. Before I go to your other teams, I want to ask, because you made me think of something when you talked about Pitino. Mm-hmm. Obviously, St. John's can't be an example here, but how much are you looking at, like, even aside from what the data says about this year's team, how much are you looking at the coach and like a guy like Rick Pitino, everybody would be scared to go up against in March? How are you looking at that? Like with Michigan State and Tom Izzo or any other coach that you would choose, how much do you value that compared to just strictly the data from this year?
I probably value it less than the market in general, but I value it. So here's what I'd say. Every coach that's been around any time has lost games they shouldn't and won games they should. Izzo lost to a 15, right? Once upon a time when everybody was picking them to go to the Final Four. It happens. To the extent that coach's style plays well in the tournament, I think Pitino's does. I don't think it's just we count wins. Pitino's teams tend to pressure the ball, tend to do things that make teams on short rest uncomfortable when they haven't had experience playing. And so I think he would be dangerous in that sense. Just like Syracuse's zone is an advantage in a tournament setting when they were at their peak as as a 10-11 that would make runs. I think that was a real effect of teams from not the ACC were not used to seeing it, and it gave them an advantage. Michigan State style will play in the NCAA tournament. Teams like that defend like they do and are as good as they do as eight seeds are dangerous. And so to the extent the same coach is building the same type of team, I think that matters. So I do think it matters some. But to the extent the team's changed, like Tennessee struggled, right? If we're going to look for a counterexample, Rick Barnes has struggled in the tournament. And so you might say Rick Barnes will never win. History is full of guys who've been said of them, they'll never win. And then they won. Rick Barnes's recent teams have had no offense. They've been defensive rock fights. They at least have Dalton Knecht in offense this year. So they probably won't do it because the odds are nobody does it. But this Tennessee team is at least stylistically different enough where I'm like, okay, I could see a path to this offense playing better for a stretch of games.
Yeah, Dalton Kincaid is really, really fun to watch and has kind of changed my estimation of that team for sure.
Juan Gabriel. Juanquis. Selena. Selena. Celia Cruz. Azúcar. Carol G. La Bichota. Christina Aguilera. Ex-Tina. Just to name a few.
We're serving the whole story.
From rags to riches.
And all the tea in between.
I'm Liliana Vasquez.
And I'm Joseph Carrillo.
And we're the host of Becoming an Icon Season 2.
Guess who's back in the house?
And we're bringing you even more stories behind the world's biggest stars in Latin music.
Certified Latin royalty.
Consider us your star sleuths, your chisme besties, digging beneath los mejores éxitos to bring you everything you didn't know about your favorite Latin icons.
Hey, you know what, my boo? You're my favorite icon.
Aw, Joseph!
Listen to Becoming an Icon, part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
All right, I interrupted you. So what are some more nuggets from teams actually in the field?
That's fine. I mentioned the Nebraska A&M game. Well, that game, we've got major positive adjustments on both Nebraska and A&M. I mean, Nebraska at full strength, and they've not been at full strength all year for parts of the season. But when their full lineup is in, this Nebraska team's legit. I mean, they are, until the collapse against Illinois, it looked like they were going to go ahead and roll in that game. But they showed you what they're capable of. So I think Nebraska is a really good team. And I think this A&M team, since the switch to Obiseki, that's a real effect. He changes the dynamic of that team. That team could not score with just the two guards. They had no shooters. Adding him and then finally deciding to go three guards and maybe sacrifice a little defense in exchange for that offensive explosion has unlocked A&M. And I think both of those teams are examples of teams that are significantly better. They play each other, unfortunately, or I would like them both. But I think that makes for a dangerous spot for Houston. If Juwan Roberts, who was limited with a knee problem in the Big 12 tournament, is not 100%, that's a problem. Some other teams that I would say, if we want to go a little lower seeds, you know, some 16 seeds we've adjusted, but I assume you're not picking at 16. But if you are, Montana State has dramatically changed their lineup. Not all the 16s have, but Montana State would be a team I'd say is better than their numbers. Go a little lower. I mentioned Long Beach going against Arizona, and Charleston, we talked about already. Charleston, you know, their point guard Kobe Rogers came from D2 Nova Southeastern. They were undefeated last year. I think it took a growing period for him to adjust to D1. They got off to a struggle. He got taken out of the lineup. But since he's come back in his first year with the program, this team's playing a lot better with the current rotation. This Charleston team, I think, is a danger to Alabama. And so I think, and that's because they're better than their raw numbers.
We have a couple questions more coming in the chat. Somebody actually asked about a 16 seed upsetting a 1 seed this year. Obviously, you know, not something you're ever really comfortable predicting. Right. We also have a question from Matt. Which 13 seed do you like to beat a 4 seed, if any? As a reminder, you know, for everybody watching, there's Charleston, Alabama is a 13-4. There's Samford, Kansas is a 13-4. Mm-hmm. I'm scrolling through here to remind my... Oh, Vermont Duke is a 13-4. And then the last one is, what was it? It was Yale Auburn.
Yale and Auburn.
Any of those? Yeah.
I mean, because it's the NCAA tournament, the answer is probably will be Auburn, because I don't think it will happen. I think that's the one I would least, this Auburn team, I think you can question whether they will lose to a elite offensive team like UConn. The games they've struggled have been Kentucky lit them up, and, let me think who else. They lost to Tennessee, and they Baylor in the opener, who is a good offense, that came back against them. But they've dominated some of the like mid-tier South Carolina types that don't have a great offense. And so I would have a hard time seeing Auburn being that one. I think it's more Charleston. I think it's more the Samford situation with Kansas. And then the other one we mentioned was Duke Vermont. That one, Vermont's got some injury questions. I know didn't look great at the end of the year, so that always concerns you, but this Duke team is balanced. They project as a team that should not struggle against an inferior opponent. We'll see.
Yeah, you mentioned that Auburn, you know, going up against good offenses. Their last five losses, Tennessee, Kentucky, Florida, Mississippi State, and Alabama. So, you know, yeah. A lot of good offenses, you know, sprinkled in throughout there. Another question here. D. Mitch, he gives us his final four and some of his big upsets. UConn, Arizona, Purdue, NC State, another person back in the Wolfpack. That's his final four. Again, UConn, Arizona, Purdue, NC State. And then his big upsets are JMU beating Wisconsin and UAB beating San Diego. What do you think about his bracket?
I mean, you can fill that out at home. I wouldn't enter it to win a contest heads up with like 20 friends, because you're taking a thin path when your chances are 5% going in. But, you know, live, you know, YOLO, baby, in your personal bracket, right? Yeah. Or go, here's the thing, moneyline that stuff, right? Rather than putting it in a bracket. If you want to take stands on those teams, you're going to make a lot more money with other avenues than a bracket, I think, on the risk reward scale.
I want to ask you, because we've mentioned UConn a bunch, and they are the number one overall seed. They're the defending champs. They're probably better than they were last year. Is there a team, and you can loop UConn in, or can there can be somebody else, that you think the public is overvaluing? I mean, it feels hard to make a case against UConn. I mean, there are other talented teams out there, but like it's one of those things where it's like, can you get value elsewhere? Sure, but UConn is the favorite for a reason. How do you evaluate them? Like, I don't know if there's one of these teams where it's, are you taking UConn versus the field? But they are the clear favorites.
They are the favorite. If you look at the metrics like KenPom, or you look at like raw power ratings, the other teams are close. However, UConn is really brought down by games that they were without some key players. I mean, we had, you know, a stretch where the center was out. We had, you know, at full strength, this UConn team is dominant. And the only team that beat him really at full strength recently was Creighton, and Creighton just shot lights out. If somebody goes and hits 55% of threes against them, yes, they can beat them. But short of that, they're dominant. And so I do think there's a little step above the others. Not to say they can lose. It's the NCAA tournament. Things happen all the time. I'm curious, as I say this on Sunday night, as we're sitting here talking, I don't know how popular UConn will be. I don't know if they'll be too popular. My guess is they might be, because they're the defending champ, because they've shown well, but they might not be. I mean, it may depend on your pool. I don't know the answer to that right now as we sit here. I'll be curious to see where the numbers end up. We're collecting them. We'll get more and more roll in over the next 24, 48 hours, and we'll see what the data is showing on how the public thinks about this.
Do you have, if I took UConn off the table, you're not allowed to pick them. Do you have a high seed that you like as your early champion? Again, I'm not going to, you know, keep you beholden to this. It's Sunday night. Yeah. There's a whole week of stuff. Is there like a favorite that you like besides UConn, and then also maybe a long shot?
I have concerns about Purdue going against. I know they did really well in November. I think there are teams that are really good teams, the types of teams they'll play if they get to the Elite Eight, Final Four. that will be able to pressure them, will be able to at least somewhat neutralize their size, and can turn them over. Arizona, I like their path. I like Arizona at their peak. Obviously, I'm concerned about what happened in the Pac-12 tournament and against a USC team that was much better than their overall numbers. That team was coming together. They lost to them, and then they smoked them, and then they turned around and lost to an Oregon team that has Dante Fale, who is on like a run we haven't seen. But that Arizona team, I think, I'm curious to see where their value numbers. They've had two. They've lost as a one seed in the Sweet 16, and they lost to Princeton last year. Those are the only 2 years with this coach. I'm wondering if we'll get a little bit. This coach can't win, and maybe they're a value. That's kind of like what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I had a similar thought when I was thinking about Tommy Lloyd. Actually, the other day, I was thinking, man, is he one of these coaches that is just going to have this reputation of not being able to win? But it's also been such a small sample size at this point. It's not like, you know, a Jay Wright who had like a decade plus of these upsets, you know, that he was dealing with.
Because it may just be Kirk Creasa isn't there anymore, and he drove me crazy, and he would come up bad in the big games. And this team's better, but we'll see. Yeah.
Alex says he could see Samford upsetting Kansas. D. Mitch says he thinks Houston's overvalued. Sam asks, and I'm putting on a spot here because this is a big pool to be picking from, what seven seed or worse do you think has the best shot at making a Final Four? I believe a seven or worse has made it in seven of the last 9 years. I didn't confirm that, but it sounds like it's a reasonably believable stat. So what seven seed or worse do you think has the best shot?
Okay, let's see, I would have had Florida higher than a seven until the hang. I thought they were underseeded, but now I have concerns. Seven seed or worse. Okay, if one of the teams beats, I mentioned A&M, do they have the offense? Nebraska. If Michigan State beats North Carolina, that path opens up a lot. That's obviously a big question mark, right? And this Michigan State team is like 2-200 in close games this year and is really underperformed and shot poorly at the biggest moments and come up small at the biggest moments. But sometimes those teams, we've seen it with Kentucky's in the past, as eight seeds. We've seen it with North Carolina. They get new life in the tournament. They got in. And they did not achieve well in the season. But the underlying numbers say they're a top 20, top 25 team. And that's what we have here. Numbers say Michigan State's better than an eight. So I could see them. I mean, they've done it before. They'd be on my short list. This New Mexico team, guard play and turning people over. I think they kind of hit a swoon in the Mountain West in the second part of that schedule. And maybe those teams just got used to playing them and were able to, like, play against them a little better when they had full time to prep. I think New Mexico could be a matchup nightmare and is a top 25 power rated kind of by the analytics type team that has a decent draw. And so if we're like, oh, this team is getting hot and they have the three guards that can do it. Yes, they'd be on the list. I think those are some I would go with.
Yeah, I think those are good ones. Any other parting thoughts as we sit here just a few hours after the bracket was released?
Mm-hmm. Super excited to see, like, you know, some of these narratives. I will be honest with you. It's a narrative-driven business. I personally root for coaches who haven't had success to get it and all that stuff. I'll be curious because some of them will fail. But I bet you this Final Four will have some team in it the coach has been written off as he can't win the tournament and he's going to make a run. We've got so many programs that have no history of winning the title up top. And it'll be interesting if one of them can break through. Obviously, Connecticut has had many over the years recently, in the last 20 years. But not many of the others have. Houston, Purdue, Arizona hasn't won since 97. There's a lot of teams in contention this year who haven't had that in a while. I'll be interested to see if one can break through.
Hopefully everybody has been paying close attention to Jason's locks of the tournament that we will hold him to, everything he said here tonight. We'll wrap up here in a second. Before we sign off, Jason, can you just give everybody one last sort of quick overview of some of the actual features in the Pool Genius NCAA Bracket Picks product?
Yeah, we got so many features. We got customized picks for your bracket, as many pools as you want. If you are a subscriber and you want to enter, you know, 50 pools, you can set 50 pools up. Different rules, whatever, and get brackets for those pools. We have advancement odds. You can use those for a variety of things. You don't have to trust us, but we'll tell you what the advancement odds for each team. We'll show you the public pick data. We've got data for you to study for days. Team notes, the things I've been talking about, players in, players out, which teams are excelling. We've been writing up bullet point notes in detail on these teams and telling you why we're adjusting teams. So you may disagree with us, but you at least have our notes as to why, if you want to look at those. We also have, if you're interested, Survivor and Calcutta tools. I like to play in a NCAA Survivor pools. We haven't really talked about that, but those are wild. Playing in a Survivor pool in the NCAA tournament is super fun because it gets wild in the late rounds when, you know, people are running out of picks and they're picking the underdog and maybe they hit because, you know, all that stuff. So that's fun. Calcutta pools also, we have tools for that. And I'll be doing other stuff. We'll be monitoring the news so you can check all our data and get your picks at Pool Genius.
Yeah, we usually do a Fantasy Pros, you know, Survivor pool within the company, you know, with the employees. So I will certainly be using Pool Genius to help me hopefully win that one, which I've never won before. I am very excited to dive into everything this week. That'll do it for our Fantasy Pros 2024 special edition March Madness podcast. And thank you to Jason Lisk of Pool Genius for joining us. One last time, don't forget about the exclusive Fantasy Pros deal with Pool Genius, 40% off March Madness tools and picks, and up to 55% off annual subscriptions at Pool Genius. Head to poolgenius.com/fantasypros. That's poolgenius.com/fantasypros. Best of luck to everyone in their bracket pools this season. Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Fantasy Football Podcast. If you love the show, the best free way to support us is by leaving a positive review on Apple Podcasts at fantasypros.com/review or on Spotify. Follow us on X, Instagram, and TikTok at Fantasy Pros, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.